So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Today, we are diving into Global Accessibility Awareness Day, GAD 23, and how many, many big companies are highlighting and focusing on accessibility. I know this is something near and dear to your heart, Sherlyn, so yeah, we have a lot to talk about here. News from Apple, Google, Adobe, and others. And as always, there's also some AI news. There's AI news every time. We have a couple new Amazon devices to talk about, so that's fun. And you know what? We'll catch up with you, Sherlyn, because you've been out for a couple weeks. So I want to know like how things were at for you at I/O and everything. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to the Engadget Podcast on iTunes. Leave us a review there. Subscribe anywhere, to be honest. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. And join us Thursdays, typically around 10:30 a.m. Eastern, on our YouTube channel for our live stream. We talk live with the audience. We sometimes show off gadgets, and we always answer questions, too. So it's a fun time. Come join us. So, Sherlyn, Global Accessibility Awareness Day 23 is here. It's happening right now as we're recording. And we've got a bunch of news, but the one that was really most striking to me is the news about Apple's assistive access. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah. Let's start zooming out a little bit. Global Accessibility Awareness Day, GAD. This is the 12th year running that we've had GAAD. So for big tech companies, it's only in the recent few years that they've used this week or day to announce. You know, accessibility-oriented updates. And Apple actually has been doing it, I think, maybe the most consistently, and also the most in terms of volume of news around accessibility. While other companies sometimes just wait till, you know, other launches to announce accessibility-related stuff or more quiet about their announcements, Apple has traditionally, again, in the last, I want to say, like 4 to 5 years, been more like bold about it. You know, it's really staking a claim. It's really saving a whole bunch of a meaty pack of updates for this week each year. So this year, Apple, again, leading the pack with like some of the biggest changes or the biggest updates coming for people with needs for assistive needs, stuff like that. Today, or actually this week, announced assistive access. It is basically part of the accessibility settings of iOS and iPadOS, which changes the interface of the typical like iPhone or iPad layout into something that's, again, simpler for people with maybe cognitive disabilities or just need fewer distractions on their iOS or OS interface. It's like, you know, it reminds me of those phones catering directly to seniors or elderly people, or like devices that are built with larger buttons and larger font and that sort of stuff. It's kind of like that, but iOS, right? So if you turn on assistive access, say on your iPhone, basically you get a choice of 6 bigger buttons that take up the screen in like a 2x3 layout, and bigger fonts, bigger icon shapes, and the apps themselves are also streamlined. So Apple's first party apps have mostly been kind of tweaked to fit this layout when this setting is turned on as well. So let's say you go into messages and you want to, and you're a person that, you know, really doesn't like dealing with a lot of messages at once, or you feel overwhelmed when you see a whole long list of texts, right? In the messages app in assistive access, you really only see the people you've whitelisted. So your conversations with those people are front and center, again, in larger buttons, larger font, pictures are also bigger. And then when you tap into a message with them, you'll see things like an emoji-only keyboard, for example. And or if you prefer communicating with only video messages, you will also be able to choose from the video messages only response option, which allows you to record video messages and send them. And if you go over to photos also, instead of the typical, like, I don't know, 700 pictures you'll see at once, you see a 2x3 grid again of photos. Everything is simplified. There's always a back button at the bottom, which for me, hallelujah. I hate that on iOS you don't have the simple swipe in from the side gesture, right?
I mean, we've lost the home button. I feel like for a lot of people that was your way to get out of an app, but now they're all the buttons are all over the place. The arrows are everywhere now.
Yeah. It's swipe, mm-hmm. right? Or you reach to the upper left to go get back to one page or something like that. So you know, in assistive access, you always have that back button at the bottom of the page when you're you know, seeing something like Apple Music or Apple Photos. I mean, this is basically a whole new version of iOS, isn't it? I thought that was pretty significant that and that Apple really went to such lengths, right? These are all first-party apps basically would work nicely with this. I think some third-party apps will too. I don't know. Devendra, would you turn this feature on for someone in your family?
Yeah, for sure.
You think someone would benefit? Yeah.
Yeah, certainly older people in my family and people who have vision issues too and who can't deal with the clutter of a typical smartphone interface and like the flood of notifications we get. And it was like so much stuff. Like smartphones have become just so crazy busy. And now we are, what, 15 years after the iPhone debuted, basically. So I feel like now is a good point to kind of do this and to, you know, focus on people who may have issues. We see people in the chat, by basically Peter Lee in the chat mentioned that it would be great for his mom who doesn't understand smartphones or English very well, too. So these are big buttons, very clear text. It's very clear, like, what the buttons do and how to get to the apps. I'd be interested to see how third parties actually take advantage of this. I think especially the ones where people may know they have older users and they may want to cater a bit to them. Like the New York Times app or something, like a way to read things better. Did they say anything about web pages, if they're like doing anything to make text or anything more readable on web pages, Sherlyn?
I mean, that's part of some of the updates Apple also announced, right? Assistive access isn't the only thing that Apple announced. And we'll get to more of that in a little bit. But, you know, you have more options to customize the font sizes for those who have visual impairments or just prefer different font sizes on their home screen and stuff like that. They didn't specifically say if web pages in, say, Safari in assistive access would look different. I mean, this was quite a high level.
I assume it would be like the reading view, you know, which already strips away so much of the junk of a page, like a bigger version of that.
Exactly.
I want to highlight two features. Steve Dent wrote up this news for us, and he pointed out that there is live speech and personal voice, which are really cool too. Live speech lets you type what you want to say and spoken aloud during phone and FaceTime calls. And for people who can speak but are at risk of losing their ability to do so, personal voice lets them like record snippets of phrases and it recreates a computer voice that sounds like them. That's kind of cool, right?
So, again, people who have diagnoses that are, you know, things like ALS or things that progressively impact your voice are at risk of losing their voice. And so they can you know, use this feature to retain that personal, familiar voice for features like live speech, right? And the setup process is you read some, you know, randomized text prompts into your iPhone or iPad, and on-device machine learning will generate your voice. The whole process of reading different phrases, according to Apple's material, will take about 15 minutes. And then you have that voice saved. And I was shown kind of a snippet of what this voice of this demo person sounded like when generated. It sounded very similar to them. I would say it wasn't like, it still had that computerized tinge to it. But it very much sounded more like them as opposed to Siri or like, you know, any other computer voice we have on the market these
days. And this is Apple relying on its own like machine learning models to do this. Like they haven't opened up to a lot of the, you know, the large language models and the bigger AI projects we've been talking about. This is one of those areas where I feel like could get a lot better for Apple too. Like that needs to be an episode at some point, because where is Apple in AI? I don't know, but they are doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Like there's a lot of computer vision work in photos and everything. So
I mean, I think it's a huge conversation. I think Apple's been in AI, just not necessarily generative AI.
Well, they don't talk about Siri very much anymore, because the AI around Siri has been like,
well, they focus on AI for what? Computer vision and photo stuff. What do they even call their engine? Photonic engine? I don't
Photonic
even remember.
I mean, even the autocorrect and everything, like they have talked about those sorts
exactly.
of things being like this.
Right.
So is there anything else you want to mention about the Apple stuff, Sherlyn? Because I know Google, you were talking with Google about something,
There's
right?
so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Apple had a bunch more updates. For the details, I encourage you to read the article that Steve wrote for us on Engadget.com. I'm also working on a separate story that will also have a lot of the details. So go ahead. But these two, I mean, again, just a small... But the more significant portions of Apple's news for accessibility-related products this week. And Apple, again, leading the way with some of the biggest news
for sure.
this week, too.
And a couple of weeks before DubDub, too. So we're going to be hearing a lot more Apple news soon. And I'm sure they will like find some ways to weave in these notions of
yeah.
accessibility into the actual
yeah.
product.
And these are... Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be clear, these are previews, yeah. right? Like, this is the announcement time, but not necessarily the feature launch date. Some of these are coming soon. Some of them coming in the fall. Some of them coming later this year. For all the details, the article will have whatever time frame Apple told us.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What's up with Google? Because there was some
yeah.
sort of AI stuff you want to talk about, I think.
I had the opportunity to have an exclusive chat with Eve Anderson, who's the head of... Her title changed recently. She was the head of product inclusion, equity, and accessibility and stuff like that on at Google. Now she's like director of product for all. Basically, inclusivity, accessibility, right? And today, literally 10 a.m. Eastern today, Google announced a new feature called Visual Q&A, so VQA. It's part of the company's Lookout, which is, the app where you use your phone and point the camera at things and it'll detect items around you. That reminds me of something else I wanted to talk about Apple, but I'll circle back. They release very similar features here in the space for people who are visually impaired, right? Google's feature is VQ&A, and it uses generative AI to in image mode. If a person who's using Lookup to, ask your phone, hey, what's this picture of? The system will first tell you, hey, in this picture, there's dogs on the beach or whatever, right? And what Visual Q&A allows for is for you to follow up with questions like, hey, is the weather, like, what's the weather like? Are there other people in the scene? Because here's the thing, and I'm sure, I don't know if you struggle with this too, I do, Devendra, but when you're writing image descriptions or captions or alt text when we're uploading pictures, right, there is a bit of a struggle in terms of how much detail to include. Sometimes I just go phone with camera facing yeah. front.
And if you're uploading
in front of a black background.
If you're uploading 20 pictures, like I don't, that is
it's a lot.
A little tedious.
Right.
As much as
but then there's also,
get that. Yeah.
Right. And there's also so many ways I can describe a phone in front of a background mm-hmm. held in midair, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, do
yeah.
you need to know I held it with my left hand? You know what I mean? Do you need to know that this is a fair-skinned person? It's that's kind of the struggle. And so what VQ&A does is kind of allow for the user to be a bit more involved in how much detail to get. So if you want more detail, obviously you can ask VQ&A a follow-up question, right? What breed is that dog? Are there any kids in the picture? Because if those things aren't actually addressed in the initial description, letting the user have the opportunity to ask follow-up questions gives them the power to ask what they want. So that's the beauty of using a bit more of generative AI in something like VQ&A. Obviously, I think it's a lot of steps. I think it's something that's, I'm not sure. As a person who has sight, I don't know how actually useful it will be. So obviously it's something I'm going to ask some of my visually impaired
yeah.
sources or friends to try out or let me know.
Is this feature actually something people can try soon? Because I'm looking around and Google
right,
has
right.
been talking about VQ&A since like last year, honestly. So,
well, yeah,
thinking?
This is the
yeah.
first time they're talking about using generative AI to kind of come up with some of the answers. There's no prompts. This is really just for people who are visually impaired to ask the questions themselves. And the feature is coming soon. So part of the announcement is that it's coming, I forget if it was fall or later this year, and also at one point Google used the word soon. So I was like, all right, well, three different time frames. But this feature is coming. I would wager before the end of the year. That's good to hear, at least, that it's coming out. And back to what Apple did, though. Apple has had this feature called Magnifier for people who are visually impaired for a long time now. And in Magnifier, you have something called Detection Mode, which last year we saw Detection Mode got a new ability to recognize when doors are there. So it's called Door Detection Mode. And when it sees a door, it will tell you if there's a sign on it whether it's closing hours or whether credit cards are accepted, that sort of information detection or door detection on iOS can read it out to you. So this week, what Apple announced is a new thing called point and speak within detection mode. So instead of just, you know, like, for example, if you hold up the phone in detection mode at a microwave oven, it just tells you microwave, right? It doesn't tell you much else. But now with point and speak, at least when it's available to people, people who are using this feature can hold up their phone or the camera, point it at the microwave, and use their fingers to point at specific parts of the keypad and have what's on there, the labels, read out to you. So 1 minute, defrost, whatever it is, start. You can hold up your phone with one hand, use your finger on the other, and point along the keypad and have the phone read out to you, which is actually, if you think about it, quite a challenging task, technologically, because it needs to really like drill in on exactly which part you're pointing at and read that out to you.
And deconstruct
this
it.
Works with right, exactly. This works with just text so far, not a lot of like clarity on whether icons like warning signs are supported just yet, but it will read out the words, which I think is, you know, quite useful. I never think about how people use appliances, you know. You would just delicate wash button, you know.
And everything is not very clear. Every manufacturer has like different buttons for different things. Like the ice maker and the like water filter on my fridge, my mom always has a hard time seeing it because it's not like lit up properly. And it's like one button where you're cycling through water and ice. And it, even that interface doesn't make sense. So yeah,
exactly.
It's a pain, especially if you go to somebody else's house where you're not used to the appliances and everything. Yeah.
It's also not just for people who are fully, you know, just who are blind, visually impaired. Anyone that has trouble seeing the words that might be super tiny. You could, you know, maybe hold your phone up closer to the thing and point at specific parts of what you're looking at. Again, with accessibility and inclusive design, if you design it to be inclusive for one part of the population, many other parts of the population benefit as well. It's not just for one purpose.
People can
right?
benefit. So it's interesting to see Apple talking about this stuff too, because I think the idea of holding your phone up to something and having it call out to you, maybe a little clunky, except for people who really need it. But you also see, like, if we were wearing augmented reality glasses and I was just looking at something
that's tied to that feature,
phone, and you'd be like, okay, what is this? Read me what's here or something. And then the iPhone or whatever will talk to you through the glasses. It is interesting to see Apple's like vision for where true augmentation could take us, you know?
So I do want to point out that like there was already a device that sort of does this. We awarded the company name is like escaping me at the moment. But last year at CES, so not 2023, but 2022, the winner of our best accessibility product is actually eyewear. It's like a pair of glasses with a camera on it that will also look at what you're pointing at and read things out to you. And it does more. It does just not just like appliance labels, but also when you're reading a book, if you point to a specific paragraph, it can read out that stuff for you. But that's a single purpose device. That's the one thing it does. So it's really interesting to see Apple build all of this into iPhone. So yeah, that was a like slight deviation away from Google because I was reminded about what else Apple did, and it was along the same lines. The other, the rest of Google's news, part of it is around live caption. Live caption is the feature on your phone that basically, you know, adds subtitles to anything you're watching through your phone. It is expanding to cover more languages like French, German, and Italian coming soon. And then also Maps always had a feature that was like, it got crowdsourced information on how accessible a place was. It would label the accessibility friendliness of a place based on crowdsourced information. But that was always really specific to like places in the US and stuff like that. The announcement this week is that this feature is going to be available globally to everyone by the end of the year. So no, not as many individual news items as Apple, but Google is also making an effort here. I also think Google has a tendency to announce things along the whole year as opposed to like just this week.
Or a year in advance before they actually deliver anything to you.
Yeah. So, we will get to that in a little bit.
We'll talk about some of that stuff. It is also funny to see like AI is going to be a bigger, as much as like I am worried about like where generative AI will take us, like certainly the actual benefits of it could be really useful, especially for accessibility purposes. So it's nice to see like more of that taking shape.
This is the point that I'm going to make in this video that we shot about this week's accessibility news. So if you head on over to Engadget's YouTube channel, you'll probably see it by the time this episode goes live. But the point that I talked to Eve Anderson, right? And one of my questions for her, because our conversation was supposed to be around how generative AI can help accessibility in tech, right? one of the things I learned is that, like, at least based on what Anderson said, they were like, oh, we think of it as a user first, you know, process. So you don't go at a problem thinking, yes, I'm going to apply generative AI to this. You go to it thinking, what is the problem? How can I solve it? Rather than using the hot buzzword of the year and like shoving it into like whatever product just to, you know, clunkily make something buzzy, right? So generative AI might not actually be that helpful when it comes to accessibility related stuff. I mean, some of the biggest problems we're still struggling with in the world of accessibility or inclusive design, AI captions are still a mess. I think that's where generative AI might be able to help better, if it can pull like contextual information about a sentence and then figure out like what actually people are saying. Like this again reminds me of another thing that Apple announced this week. Apple added this feature to voice recognition or voice control, where like when you're editing your voice typos, now instead of just offering you like suggested words based on the spelling, it will also offer phonetic suggestions. So like, for example, you said, you're right, like example, you said, oh, that piques my interest, right? Uh-huh. And then it goes, instead of P-I-Q-U-E, it goes P-E-A-K. And then you tap that and you're like, that's a wrong word, I want to edit that, right? The suggested words that come up now will show P-E-A-K, P-E-E-K, P-I-Q-U-E, like that sort of thing. So peak your interest. Like, that is actually thoughtful, and that's not just an accessibility-minded feature, obviously, but it's part of the package of updates being announced.
That's good to hear, because I do feel like, in general, I feel like autocorrect has gotten worse on iPhones. I don't know what's going on, but I used to be able to like bang out text pretty quickly, and now it's like I'm typing very clear things, and my iPhone's like, you mean something else entirely? Like,
Yeah. I've been experiencing that, but I thought it was because I predominantly use swipe typing. I love to swipe type.
Swipe
type's
fine, yeah.
Everything is bad. Everything I swipe out is wrong. So I wonder if
Apple's like trying to be like, well, you know, you could just hit that little microphone button and get some like, you know, voice to text going, maybe getting us all could into be. That. Because that's actually working a lot better in my experience. But sometimes you don't want to get out there.
They've been working on those engines. Yeah. I would just finish this with the thought that like, at least wrap up the Google segment with the thought that like, yeah, it's not, generative AI is not the solution for everything. Yep. I think when it comes to accessibility, I like to see companies take a little bit more thoughtful of an approach. And I'm glad to see that in this week's set of announcements, we really saw very little, like relatively fewer mentions of generative AI. And speaking of, the next thing we're about to talk about is all about generative AI, generative AI.
Well, it's from Adobe, and Adobe announced that they have a new AI, or their AI can automate adding PDF accessibility tags, which is useful to help people, you know, find information that's been put into PDFs. We need to actually see this in action to see how good it actually works. Because I think one thing we've noticed about Adobe stuff is that they have been very good about hyping up things, but the quality of what they're doing, like their generative, like their image generation AI is not Firefly. That great. Firefly is not that great compared to Midjourney and compared to DALL-E and everything. People are getting some really like janky results from Firefly, but Adobe can say, hey, we have our own image thing, and if you pay our subscription, you'll have the power of AI, except you're creating gross, dumb illustrations. They don't look very good. Yeah.
I am nervous about how this will come up. So just to be like extremely and painfully clear about how this is supposed to work, right? Right now, if you have PDF documents that people who may have visual disabilities would use screen readers to go through, right? What the meta tags in the PDF documents do is they label very clearly for screen readers what a header is, what a paragraph is, like where are the sections in this document. And so what Adobe is announcing this week is that it has AI that will automate that entire process and tell your screen reader where the header is, where the thing is. And it's releasing them in two ways. It is doing an API. It's called the accessibility PDF auto tag API. And then it's also releasing it around June in Acrobat Pro and Acrobat Reader. So I think around June is when we'll start to see whether it's actually effective. The other potentially intriguing thing about this is that it actually makes back tagging older documents more easy and more efficient at scale. So for companies that have copious amounts of PDF documents that are untagged for screen readers, this API should make that procedure or process much faster. And so people can go make their older PDFs more accessibility friendly or screen reader friendly with much less time. Again, all this is predicated on the effectiveness of this tool. And I don't know that I trust Adobe's AI specifically. This was based on what, Sensei? Have you heard of Sensei,
yeah.
Dev?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your experience with slash impression of Sensei?
I have not tested Sensei, but you know, I think in general, I feel like Adobe has been playing catch up than most other people because they see the potential multimedia uses for this, for the company right. behind, you know, Photoshop and Premiere. They need to be in this. But I have also learned I can't trust Adobe. Not completely, you know.
Not fully. So I remain cautiously, not even optimistic. I remain cautious about
this
one.
We'll see Adobe. Like they coasted for so long with what? Both Flash and the way like PDFs are. Like they have survived for very long by making the web just like honestly inaccessible with things like Flash was not a very accessible thing at all. It went against so many like web standards and everything and made life really hard for screen readers. So you got a lot of fixing. You got a lot of like explaining to do Adobe, and I hope this is part of it. I hope this is part of them getting better because yeah, PDFs also inherently are a very closed platform, right? They're not as fully searchable. They're not editable. You can't do a lot with a PDF. So even that, I'm like, okay, I'm glad you're at least auto tagging this. Anything else you want to mention about this one, Trillin?
Nope, that's really it about Adobe. We really have to wait and see. But there are, again, a big slew of other news from other companies this week about accessibility. Do you want to take the first one?
I will. I'll mention about Adobe, by the way. Like we did talk about their podcast. They're like AI-generated podcast editing tools. So that sort of thing will get easier where you will see text and you'll be able to delete a sentence and that sentence in the podcast waveform gets deleted. And that stuff will be cool. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. In other companies doing this stuff, Sony announced that Project Leonardo, their accessibility controller that we talked about several months ago, is now called the Access Controller. And we still don't have a release date. We still don't have a price or anything. So I don't expect this to be very, very cheap. But could be useful. You know, we've talked about this before. It has it's built to accommodate different ranges of motions and strength. Has analog stick caps available in like all the standard sizes, like dome and ball shapes and different things too. Different sizes of buttons can be placed at various angles, and you as a user can kind of equip it and say what you want the buttons to do. You can kind of configure it entirely. So it's built for people who have all sorts of accessibility needs, and it seems genuinely interesting and useful. I would love to have somebody who actually requires accessibility controllers to compare this to like the Xbox One. I give Microsoft a lot more credit for being there first, I'd say, and just being been talking about this stuff before a lot of these companies even ever acknowledge accessibility. So we'll see. It's a nice looking piece of hardware though. Like it looks like a PlayStation 5 controller. It's not like a half-ass type of thing. Okay, Shirley, we also have some accessibility news from a bunch of other companies. What is going on?
Yeah, so Samsung, you know, also had like a small update for us. And when I say small, I mean very small. and this comes by way of the Galaxy Buds 2 Pro. It is getting a slight update.
Two more levels.
To the ambient sound control. So basically, you could use when you use the Galaxy Buds 2 Pro, you can choose how much ambient sound to let in. And now you get two additional levels, taking it to five levels of loudness for the ambient voice to pass through, ambient sound to pass through. So hey, if you needed more clarity about how your environment sounds, or people who are just using these Buds 2 Pro as a way to kind of enhance or augment the environmental sound anyway, you now have two more levels of controls. I mean, they've also...
Have you tried it, Trillin?
Go ahead.
Just wondering.
I mean, I've used the Buds 2 Pro. I'm not a big ambient sound pass-through kind of person. I like to leave it in no tweak, so no ANC or transparency. But when I have used it when I was testing it, it worked well. I just haven't tried this new feature.
I love transparency mode. Like that's one of the things when people talk about like wireless earbuds and everything, especially if they have noise canceling, you assume like, oh no, like you're just blocked out from the world. You can't hear everything. No. With transparency modes, like you definitely get a good amount of audio. And if I'm like working somewhere, like at a coffee shop or outdoors, and I want to hear what's going on around me, it's still helpful to have transparency. So that's cool. Thank you, Samsung.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can also, you know, edit some of the ambient sound clarity to be auto-tuned to your own hearing. And also you can do this for individual ears. So let's say your left ear is more sensitive or has more hearing, then you can make that a little softer, whereas your right ear might need a bit more help. You can do that as well. So hey, Samsung, you know, did a thing this week. Cool, good for you. Xbox also had some small updates that we didn't, you know, it was kind of incremental, so we didn't really hit on its own. But basically, the company not only unveiled new, I think, accessibility support pages, something like 150 pages are available to teach people about the tools that they can use to, you know, benefit from more assistive or accessible design. But it's also introduced new accessibility settings in the Xbox app for PC, which is nice. I personally haven't used any of these, but these include the ability to disable background image, disable animations, that sort of thing that for different people with different cognitive disabilities or just don't like, you know, who may be triggered by excessive animation, for example, then there's the option now, which is nice. Yeah. Finally, WebEx is teaming up with, well, Cisco, parent company of WebEx, is teaming up with Voice-it.
And Voice-it is this, you know, fairly... the company, Voice-it. Yeah.
Voice-it, yeah, ITT. I mean, we know Voice-it, ITT, from their work with Amazon in the past, where, you know, they've actually done, and actually maybe with Google as well, where they've been working on speech recognition for people with speech impediments or speech impairments. So if you have a severe lisp or you know, get ALS, you may have non-standard speech. And so Voice-it is quite a well-known name in the space. WebEx will soon use Voice-it's AI tools to add subtitles when these people with these impediments are speaking on calls. So better captioning for them and therefore helps them better communicate. Again, with Voice-it being, having worked in this space for so long, I have a tendency to be more trusting of this feature. And this will be built into or built on top of WebEx's existing translation, live translation feature where they, you know, take something someone's saying in, say, French or Chinese and translates it to English in subtitles.
Have we heard, speaking of Voice-it, have we heard much about Nuance lately? Because I totally forgot. Microsoft bought Nuance, the maker of Dragon Naturally Speaking, last year.
I know, yeah.
And honestly, before all this AI stuff, haven't really heard a peep about that for a while.
Yeah.
I really wonder what is going on there, because that is another thing that kind of puts Microsoft in this spot of being like, I think we're all waiting for the time when we could just like sit and talk to our computers, you know, like just be like, just open the thing. Get me what's my email? Can you like add this to my calendar? Like we all want that. We all want that assistant.
I think what we want is a robot doing all our work for us that we can order around, because that sounds more like what we're talking about.
Sure. No, your computer, everything happens on your computer.
Yeah.
Give me a good assistant that actually freaking works, because that's the thing. That's the thing that would...
You're talking about the C word assistant, right? I don't know if that's a trigger, like a hot word for
The C word does not exist anymore.
I know.
She has been killed.
Sad or
by
not.
Master Chief or not.
Maybe
saved.
It's,
I don't know.
Bing AI.
Yeah. But yeah, don't forget that Microsoft now owns Nuance. Because that is like a little thing that is just gonna...
Nuance is huge. Mm-hmm. Or were huge.
Nuance was huge and also notable for being like kind of ruthless as old Microsoft was, because they would like either acquire smaller voice technology companies or like bully them out of existence. So yeah, of course Microsoft will get them. Hey, that's a thing. Maybe we'll check in on that. Okay. It for accessibility.
Well,
yeah.
So
what's up?
That is it. I mean, there was a Firefox update. We're not going to go too much into that. For all of the details on what tech companies have been announcing this week for GA80 2023, again, you can go check out Engadget.com. We got a lot of coverage on that. And again, look out for my video that will be coming either later today or tomorrow. It's just a digestible summary of everything. So yeah, I think we should keep an eye. So one more point that I'm going to make on this topic before we move on is, yeah, it's nice to see a lot of companies doing stuff, right, this week for accessibility and inclusion. But let's take a moment to remind everybody, this is not a once a year effort. This is an ongoing, continual process. You know, inclusive design should be considered at every step of product design, not just every May, you know, every third Thursday of May. GA80. That's what
I think.
About.
Like all these days that also celebrate like specific things. Like it is a thing to remind yourself that, hey, this is a thing we should be thinking about, not just the only day.
Right.
Or only month or only time we should be doing that. So yeah, good call, Sherlyn. Let's move on to some other news. And we'll start with AI this week because AI is controlling everything. And I do want to talk about the story. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, maker of ChatGPT and, you know, GPT and everything, was in a Senate hearing and basically spent a bunch of last week schmoozing with people in Congress and in Washington, D.C. And we didn't write up this story, but I'm looking at the New York Times report. And I'm seeing reporting from elsewhere. What's really interesting is that he basically goes there, is really calm and chill for 3 hours and just like, yes, please regulate me. Please, please regulate our industry. We don't really know.
I love that.
To which I'm like, huh, what's your game, Sam Altman? You are telling us exactly what we want to hear. And this is so different from Zuckerberg getting up there and just like sweating just like dying when they're like grilling him.
And also stonewalling.
Being really evasive in terms of like what he was talking about. Looking at parts of the hearing, it's like people in the government like Sam Altman. It's like there were reports that he went out to dinner, you know, with people. This is very typical. He went out to dinner, he went out to drinks. He schmoozed with Cory Booker and other people. And they just seemed to like him. During the hearings, they were calling him Sam, not Mr. Altman. And it is a really different relationship that he has compared to like Zuck and everybody else. And maybe they're just like, they don't have anything to be as angry about right now, where I think the government is aware that AI, generative AI is growing quickly, moving very fast, and we should probably do something about that. It is in Sam Altman's best interest to say he needs to be regulated, because resisting is worse. Resisting is when they're like, oh, the government is going to think, oh, you think you can self-regulate? You think you can handle this all on your own? And I think that is not the way to do this. He is taking the sort of like Zen way through all of this. It's just like going with the flow of what the government wants, basically. What do you think, Sherlyn? Because you had a positive idea of this at first, right?
I mean, I'll admit to hearing this for the first time like right now, right? And I was like, wow. Self-awareness. Maybe he's AI. Maybe he's getting sentient. I don't know. I think I agree with the sentiment that there needs to be a lot more regulation in AI right now. From what I see, hear, and know, I know that there's a lot of fluster at all the top levels of all the big companies kind of flurrying to catch up or be on top of this generative AI wave that's happening right now. And with that, you often get reckless behavior, you know, in the effort to pursue advancement, progress, or
it's the move fast and break things philosophy, which all the social media companies fell victim to, Zuckerberg especially. But it is weird that Sam Altman is like basically going to Congress and being like, guys, this AI stuff is crazy. What's happening here? This should be stopped. Sam Altman?
Booped, yeah.
Really? Maybe you guys should have slowed your roll on rolling out a lot of these models and pushing those business deals with Microsoft, basically. And I don't know if it was OpenAI or Microsoft doing it, but the cause of a lot of our consternation right now is saying, hey, maybe this could be a problem. I'm like, yeah, maybe it could be.
Well, like, here's the thing, too. We need regulation, but we also partly... I think what I admire from Google I.O., and I'm sure we get to that in a little bit, is that like Google at some point was like, we're aware how dangerous some of this stuff is, right? Whereas OpenAI was like, whatever, let's do ChatGPT-4 now and open it up to everyone. Google was like, at some point, you remember watching that scene on in I.O. where it was kind of creepy, where they did the language translation, but then they also did lip matching. And then immediately they were like, oh, we're aware of how this can be used to deep fake things. And so we're only allowing trusted users and trusted organizations to access it. I mean, they displayed awareness, some semblance of like self-awareness there of like how dangerous this could potentially be. But, you know, how effective are they going to be at limiting the use and spread of this sort of technology? Sure. Like, we've got the nuclear bomb question again, right? When the person people who designed the nuclear bomb never thought it would be used to
exactly what it was going to be used for. Come on.
Exactly. It's like, how can you say...
Somebody else doesn't create this thing, so they obliterate us, so we obliterate them first. And yeah. It's a whole
thing. So you're, it's not like it's not as cut and dry as the nuclear bomb, which is like a clear no right and wrong here, right? But this is a thing that could be used for good. It could be used for bad. And it's like, I mean, I'm talking specifically about AI, and you kind of have to be very careful. It's a very, very delicate balancing
act. I mean, yeah. And the race against for the nuclear bomb was against basically the Nazis and trying to out-innovate Nazis. And this one's basically, there's a lot of like xenophobia going on. Like this is... Everyone's worried about China. Gotta defeat China. Can't let China rule the AI. Otherwise, the economy's ruined. So, yeah, there is a lot of that going on. Anyway, folks, like we've talked about this before. We need a more intelligent and more technologically aware government that can effectively regulate these things. We can't wait until they take over the world to be like, hey, maybe we shouldn't have approved that $20 billion merger. Can we have a take backsies? That's probably not going to work. You need to be able to like anticipate problems ahead of time. We've talked about Lina Khan and like the work she's been doing at the FTC to like really trying to push more regulation and stronger limits on what these tech companies could do. But we'll be paying attention to all this because it's very interesting why he's doing what he's doing. Like this is a pure, you know, goodwill campaign so that people don't hate him as much as they hate Zuckerberg and the government, basically. Google also had some news around AI and it's about... long and costly drug discovery. I believe that's the deal. Sherlyn, did you see what Google was doing? Basically helping to do things. Typically when like a pharmaceutical company wants to develop drugs and everything, it is a long process. There's a lot of testing involved. And I think Google is saying like their cloud division is saying they have some AI tools that can help to speed that up. Have you heard anything about this from Google's side?
So I haven't heard directly from Google about this because we were just talking about other stuff. And basically, it sounds like it's a thing called the Target and Lead Identification Suite, which is aiming to help drug companies better understand proteins and amino acids that are, again, key to drug development. One of my new best friends, basically, she is... Her job, her entire job is drug trials and running and identifying. And so this is close to my friend's heart. So
I would love to know the hierarchy of your best friends. Is she new best friend? Is she in the ring, Sherlyn? Like, I don't know. Is this place an old best friend? I don't know.
There's a chance she might see this. So I got to say she's like up there. She's like top, number one.
Number one.
Happy
number
birthday, one babe. whereas the person whose wedding I went to was my former best
friend. Wow.
Anyway...
nobody share this podcast.
Nobody tell any of them. But she works in this sort of medical field, and it sounds very familiar to me. And I know, again, of a lot of the pains involved. Another one of my new friends is a biomedical engineering professor, and he also is involved in a lot of similar experimental things. And I can see that, like, yeah, this could be very helpful to them, but I can also see them being very skeptical of this and thinking that it's probably not going to be very accurate. It may or may not actually be helpful, as most AI.
They say Pfizer and Cerevol are already like testing this out, so we shall see.
Yeah. Another one of my friends works for Pfizer. Wow,
what is going on over there, Sherlyn?
Oh,
I don't know.
Maybe this is a sign from the universe that I need meds.
Some help. Speaking of AI stuff, by the way, I just wanted to shout this out. There was a really cool trailer that dropped this week for a film called The Creator. And this is notable because, first of all, this trailer starts with, what's his face? John David Washington. Denzel Washington's son, talking to a child about, you know, is he going to go to heaven? And it looks like Tenet, honestly. It looks like Tenet all over again, except a lot more sci-fi. And it's quickly revealed that, oh, this is a film about a war against AI. This movie's coming out on September 29th.
Wow.
It's like, what timing for this thing? It's about, apparently AI went rogue, of course, as it does. It dropped a nuclear bomb on Los Angeles, and now humanity is basically in a war against AI and machines, it looks like. It looks like there are machine beings. And this is a really cool looking trailer. I just want to shout it out because it is directed by Gareth Edwards, who did Star Wars Rogue One, which was a really interesting movie, kind of a troubled production. Somebody else had to come in and finish that movie. But... that movie certainly looks good. Like the eye, or Gareth Edwards' eye is really interesting in him doing a big, large scale, you know, humanity versus AI, except, oh man, this one AI is a kid. I got to protect this kid. Like, I totally see what's happening here. But the large scale action and everything of it looks really cool. And man, how timely we're all thinking right now about like what AI is doing to us. And everybody's thinking of their all the AI war stories and everything, Terminator and whatnot. It's just funny, the timing of this movie coming out. You should check out this trailer, Jolyn. I think it's totally your bag.
I mean, I'm already stoked. I would be very hyped for this movie. Julio, our live stream producer, said something like, it reminds him of that District movie with Chappie. That sounds familiar.
Chappie. It was called Chappie.
It was called Chappie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. I was sorry, like, that sounds so familiar.
Like, I like Chappie. By the way, I have a review of Chappie on Engadget.com. People were quick to point out, I think the Australian Blu-ray release has a quote from my review of Chappie. I'm like a handful of people who like Chappie's alive. Okay, Chappie's alive and well. But yeah, this looks a bit like Chappie, except without the sort of insanity and maybe a better story too, because I love Neil Blomkamp's visuals, but he cannot write worth a damn. But anyway, check out the trailer for The Creator. Looks very cool.
Yeah.
We also weirdly had like a mini Amazon hardware event this week.
Yep.
New Echo Buds, $50. Yeah.
Let me tell you all about it, okay? Out of nowhere, Amazon's like, look, I know y'all just had I.O., but screw you. We're going to do
really
some Echo hardware devices.
I really hate the way
devices.
They do this.
Launch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am getting the sense that they're trying to space out announcements. Because remember, their October hardware event's always a mess. There's always all kinds of crap going on. And not that we're never going to have an October hardware event this year, but I think we're going to see that be reserved for more interesting things like robots, drones. Anyway, this week it is the boring Echo hardware, like these $50 Echo
Buds.
That's not
boring. $50. $50 for some like AirPods looking buds with Alexa built in. That's not
freaking.
All right.
I think it's great. Yeah. So Billy Steele, our audio guru, audio and grills guru, Billy Grills, has written up this post and he is keen to review them. These, I believe, don't actually have ANC.
No, definitely not. They're semi in-ear too. So it's not like a closed design, but a bit in your ear. Yeah.
Right. But they're good enough, right? They're $50. What more are you expecting? And these are Amazon's things. And Amazon's whole like thing is to make things about products that are a little bit more affordable. So they're more, I guess, accessible to people with smaller budgets, which is fair.
Well, Amazon's whole thing is to build products that they see are selling really well on their own site and build it themselves and build it
and
cheaper.
Copy that. And, yeah. So these are the AirPods.
They're looking at Anchor.
Anchor, exactly. Anyway, they also announced new Echo Show 5 and Echo Show 5 Kids. These are the smart displays, very popular in a lot of households. The ones for this year are faster and they have better audio. So you can better hear the music that you play or the shows that you play on these devices. And then I'm going lightning fast because we have so much more to get through. But one more thing, or at least two more things, Amazon did was announce the Echo Pop. Have we ever seen an Echo Pop from Amazon. This is a brand new product category. It's basically, I would say, an in-between the Echo and the Echo Dot, right? It's not quite as small as an Echo Dot. It's not like a disc or
they
a
just
pop.
Basically cut an Echo Dot more in of half. That's what it looks like. You slice it straight.
And it's a little bigger. Yeah, exactly. You slice, an Echo Dot is a
no. The
disc.
Dot is
they
a globe now.
Down
the,
one side.
The dot is a circular sphere now.
Okay, the round one. They slice the globe one in half, basically. Yeah. So this is a semi-spherical smart speaker. It's got a little like light at the top, similar to again a lot of Echo devices. And it's only going to cost $40. Good again with the budget devices. I don't know where they ripped this design off from, but it's
cheap speakers are everywhere.
Amazon
like they want to get Alexa everywhere. It is interesting because we did talk about last year that the Alexa division, the Echo division, is losing a ton of money. Like it's not been super successful revenue wise, but they're still like pumping this stuff out there.
I personally am gonna avoid saying the Howard, so Amazon's assistant. But Julio again in our personal teeny tiny group chat says that it reminds him of a Hue Philips light, which you know what? Good point. For the actual details and the pictures of these Amazon hardware launches, go over to Engadget.com. We have all the articles and the details up there. You can already buy a lot of these things. There's also a new second gen Echo Auto device, which you like plug into the, I guess, cigarette lighter
you
or
USB. Plug into your car and you get like hands-free controls. That's hands-free controls of your phone stuff, I guess.
Nice.
I don't know how that works, but I know people, if you have a car that doesn't have Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, you may want like a better voice control. So that sort of thing could be kind of cool. I know people who used to like basically stick an Echo Dot on their dashboard to get yep. some sort of Echo stuff. But anyway, in other news, yeah. we talked a couple weeks ago about Montana's potential TikTok ban. And it looks like at this point, it is one step closer towards happening. Last night, Montana's governor signed a bill banning TikTok in the state. Governor Greg Gianforte signed it a month after it was passed by the legislature. It's scheduled to take effect in 2024. That's a long ways away, though. So there's a lot of ways and other groups that could push back on this. TikTok, of course, said this infringes on the First Amendment rights of the people of Montana by unlawfully banning TikTok. But yeah, the idea is that it's not like it would be illegal to use TikTok on it, but they would prohibit the company from operating in the state. It'll require app stores to block users from downloading TikTok. And app stores and TikTok face daily fines of $10,000 for violating the law if they don't, if they don't submit to that. So this is the strongest anti-TikTok thing we have seen yet. I know you're not the biggest TikTok fan, Trillin. Like, how do you feel about this? Like, do you think this is a worthy use of time? Is TikTok that big of a threat?
I remember before we left, we talked about this a little bit. So two things. One, it's not that I'm not a fan. I just don't use TikTok.
Even though literally it's an app it's made for you, Sherlyn. Made for showing off your dances.
Yeah, I play with the filters.
Effervescent personality. It's made for Sherlyn. Yeah.
No. But I the other thing I wanted to mention was that I was in California for Google I.O. I would drop by Santa Clara just to see things. And I saw the ByteDance HQ, which was very interesting. It was very low-key and quiet. No one, not a lot of life around there. But we did talk about this a little bit, I think a couple weeks before I disappeared from the podcast, which is that, how are they going to enforce this? How, what are you, step into Montana and TikTok just stops working? Is this an IP-based situation or geolocation-based? Are Montana residents then suddenly allowed to use TikTok when they leave the state? What is going on?
You can still use TikTok in Montana. I haven't seen the details. That's the whole thing.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to, we don't know what's going to happen. And TikTok is going to fight it before.
The logistics of this baffle me is all I'm saying. I don't get it.
It's such a waste.
I get the sentiment. I don't get the how this is going to work.
We need a privacy bill. We need a national privacy bill because that is the problem.
And not just on TikTok. Yeah. Not just on TikTok. I've had this conversation again with a lot of people, including here on the podcast, which is that TikTok is only one part of the problem. If you're going to ban TikTok, it's going to set a precedent for Facebook, Instagram, whatever else is collecting your data, because you'd be naive to think TikTok's the only one. The people are scared about it right now is because TikTok's got supposedly affiliations with China.
Yes, come on. It's owned by the Chinese.
Yes, okay. But what happens if ByteDance and TikTok separate and ByteDance just goes back to China and TikTok operates as an independent entity in the US? That's what I'm hearing might happen. We'll see.
Yeah.
But that's just part of the problem is what I'm saying, right? There's a lot more going on.
For sure.
That people
if they're worried about data privacy we are giving up more to Facebook and other US companies
and Google
and everybody. So yes, let's hopefully make that happen. Also, in other news, iPhone syncing for Windows 11 is now available to everybody. Microsoft's PhoneLink iOS app. I haven't actually tried this yet. I know Intel was working on a similar phone syncing type of thing. But yeah, now everybody could use it. This is one thing that I do miss. As an iPhone user on Windows, I do miss when I have work laptops and I have other Mac laptops. When I'm on a Mac, I'm like, oh, nice, messages. I could just do my text. I could it's all seamless. I go to my Windows desktop and I'm like, I gotta keep an eye on my text separately. It just feels not great. It'll be interesting to see how this works and how it works without breaking iMessage. Because to me, I feel like that's the hard part. It's not that hard to synchronize your text. It's hard to do it within the iMessage platform too. So what do you think?
Ecosystem.
Because I know you're a Windows fan more than a Mac fan.
Absolutely. That's the main reason. Well, so I also don't want to sync my personal text stuff to our work laptop, which is a MacBook, right? So I don't do that. And that's why I rely on apps like Telegram so much. But if I could use iMessage on a Windows PC, which is apparently happening soon, I feel like I would text people more. sorry to all the friends I've ignored for months. But I don't know. I think it's tricky. I think iMessage is, a wall, because I'd be curious to see how it behaves. Will I be part of all these iMessage group chats still? Will I be able to send a GIF and have it show up the same way across all the platforms? I've not tested this at all. I want to, though, so
We shall see. All right, let's move on to what we're working on. Is there anything else you want to mention, Sherlyn?
I just want to say, I mean, it's kind of related to what we're working on, which is that this week has out of nowhere been horrendously busy and like a crazy news week. I will shout out, I know I said this, but I didn't write it down. Really quick fire shout out. There was like WhatsApp's new privacy feature. There was Sonos ending support for local file playback on Android. The IRS has a new, or reportedly has a free TurboTax alternative in the works. We've got Instagram users being able to comment on posts with GIFs. Uber had a whole ass event where it announced like two things. It will roll out teen accounts with safety features next week. And then it's also allowing you to call an Uber like a normal taxi. Like you call a phone number and you call for one. A toll-free phone line. And then also, let's not forget, the New York Times built a standalone app for audio That's journalism. True. Like it's going That's whole true. Hog into it. Like,
New York Times is really good at locking you into their apps and their services. And I think for maybe some users, like just figuring out podcasts is kind of tough. Like where do I go? I go to my iTunes and my Apple podcast app? Do I go to this other thing? If I'm on Android, it doesn't make any sense. You got to go subscribe. It does make sense for a New York Times to be like, hey, all our shows are right here. You don't have to go anywhere else. All the podcasts you need.
Is audio going to kill the TikTok star? You know what I mean?
No.
You know?
Definitely not.
Video killed the radio star. So now we're coming full circle. Podcast will kill the TikTok star. No, I'm kidding.
It makes sense because I think podcast exclusivity is the bad thing. Like what Spotify did to just like lock things to its platform. New York Times podcast will still be available elsewhere, but they did say they're going to have some little exclusivity shows. So, you know, small things. Yeah. You can only see it on their app. Man, New York Times is just so good at that sort of lock in, but. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to what we're working on. And yeah, I agree, Sherlyn. It's been a very busy week, and there are some busy weeks coming up ahead. Microsoft Build is next week, and we don't fully know what to expect there. It just seems like there's a lot of news incoming, just from what I'm seeing internally among like leaks and everything. We are still dub is going to happen. WWDC is going to happen in the next few weeks. We've also got all sorts of devices to review, too. Like I have LG's 49-inch super ultra wide gaming monitor that just came. I have to review that. There's Asus ZenBook S13 or 14 that looks really cool. I want to get some time with. So I've got a lot of reviews in the work. And also, we have seen the rumors that NVIDIA and AMD are also up to something too. So crazy, crazy times. What are you up to, Sherlyn?
Yeah, I just got back from I/O and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how we all felt about that event. I mean, for me, you know, what did you feel were some of the standouts watching from a distance, right? I was able to check out Project Starline in person. That was their holographic video calls thing. I think that was one thing that maybe we didn't really get a chance to talk about here on the show. We obviously know what was announced, which was the Pixel Fold, Pixel Tablet, a whole bunch of new AI, like search generative experience. Pixel 7a was also announced there. And that, like, again, that really freaky lip matching translation thing. Google is kind of, it's creepy, uncanny, and scary, but also intriguing. So I don't know. What did you feel like you wanted to know more of about my experience?
I mean,
on the ground,
what was your Starline experience like? Because I did mention it. I did say that people should go check out your coverage. But, you know, this is the holographic, virtual meeting type of thing. I saw your coverage. You said it looked realistic. You tried to reach out and like touch a thing the other person was holding several times, even though they were like in a booth next to you. Right. So it is also the hilarious image of like, this is the future of, remote communication. You're just in two separate boxes, 5 feet away from each other.
Yep.
But okay.
They were next to each other too. It was so funny. It was freaky. Like at first I was like, oh, meh, underwhelming. When I stepped in, I was like, oh, you look just like the person that I saw right outside just now 5 seconds ago, but now through a screen. But yeah, the second he tried to hand me an apple, I was like, whoa. And I was like a child looking at ice cream for the first time. It was like mind blown. I was like, oh, I really feel like I can grab this apple. I really feel like I can fist bump you. And it's very, I think the depth and the spatial projection were very good. Again, it's not something that I can really tell you more about because it's all like stuff we couldn't get video of.
It's holographic. Let's put it, because you also tested out Logitech's thing, Sherlyn.
Project Ghost,
the video conferencing booth, which is really just a big ass screen. But
yep.
Also, different. Much like it's a thing that exists right now. People could just companies can just buy it. Did it feel like functionally different to having like a life-size version of somebody on the screen versus the holographics? Do you think it is worth the extra investment for a holograph system?
Right. Isn't that the million-dollar question? Isn't that the question we're asking about the whole thing, right? It's I don't think anything, even a holographic projection that is so realistic, I don't even think that is going to ever replace in person. Well,
it's not about replacing.
In-person conversations. Yeah. Right. They're not meant to be, right? But do I think Project Ghost was better or do I think Project Starline was better? So I think part of it is in the way Project Ghost was set up. Project Ghost was this furniture first concept where
big
like
screen and furniture.
Vibes,
that's it.
Beautiful couch, right? Like with things that exist. I think I love the aesthetic. And so I felt very comfortable in that environment, sitting there feeling like I was going to a therapy session. Did I need the person's hand to reach out to me to hand me an apple I couldn't grab? No. I'm technologically very impressed by what Google has done, but do I think it's entirely necessary? I'm not convinced. I think Google needs to convince me. Hi. I know you're all listening because everybody there apparently tells me they
wow.
want a podcast. So
Jillian really thinks highly of her standing at Google.
First of all, thanks. Yeah. We appreciate the support. But yeah, I think this technology is so impressive. I'm blown away. But at the same time, give me a use case. Why do I want to reach out and grab a non-existent apple?
Exactly. Except to have that demo. I totally agree with you, Sherlyn. We keep having this conversation about like Google building things. And I have been burned too many times. I cannot trust you, Google. I've seen many of your concepts. I've gotten excited about things and you guys just either fail to deliver the software for it or you fail to support it properly or the people in charge move on to other projects at Google because that is how that company works, right? You're only there to launch things. You're not there to sustain things. And that is how your worth as a Google product manager basically is. Like, that's the problem. We talked a bit about this. I don't know if you hear Sherlyn, but there was a report saying like basically Google's internal culture is a big reason why so many products die because there is no real motivation to kind of keep things going because you are judged and you get raises and bonuses based on launching.
Right.
You know? So
interesting. Yeah. No, that's a good point. If you're a Google employee listening to this or watching, you send us an email. Send me an email. I'm Sherlyn@engadget.com or podcast@engadget.com or tips@engadget.com. Attention me and Devendra. We'll look into this. I will say I had a lot of fun at Google I.O., but there's more events, like you mentioned, more events coming up, more secrets than ever before. Honestly, like I left Google with a bunch of secrets. Let's just put it that way. And I'm more secretive than I've ever been. Also, I'm entering a slight change in my role here at Engadget. So less forward facing, more behind the scenes work for me. You will still see me, but there's changes that will mean I'm busy, even though I don't look like it.
It's okay. I have we have a closet with Sherlyn's name just like taped on. It's like just gonna shove her in there. But she'll still be in the podcast.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Speaking of stuff happening at the site around Engadget, Billy Steele reviewed the Beats Studio Buds Plus. That's the thing, right? Beats Studio Buds Plus, which is Beats, like, you know, slightly newer, totally wireless earbuds. Has changes to ANC, better battery life. He gave it a, you know, decent score, 84. These come in cheaper, or a little bit cheaper, than the AirPods Pro 2. They're $170. AirPods Pro 2 are still like $250, right?
And isn't it funny if you think about it? Apple owns Beats, right?
This is all the this is Apple's other thing. And honestly, I really liked Beats headsets for a long, long time. Like I had the Beats Fit Pro. I had the last version. So the Studio was like the slightly smaller version. And I liked the Beats, and I lost my AirPods Pro 2 a couple of weeks ago at a theater. I'm still remotely tracking it in the Find My app, and I see where exactly it is.
So you know who stole it.
I don't know who stole it, but I see it moving to a nearby town. And I was thinking, like, man, should I just, like, go back to the Beats Fit Pro? They're really nice. And in the end, I just caved because I really like the AirPods Pro 2. I use them so much. Yeah. They are always attached to my ears. They are, like, an extension of my being at this point. Like, I take calls. I am listening to podcasts. I need them to live. Like, the kids are making noise and like stuff is happening in the house and I need to like do other things. It's something that lets me like be multifunctional. And I was waiting. Yeah. I was like, when is Beats going to have a new thing? This could have been tempting because I do like Beats' hardware, but this case also looks like
I was going to say, it's a transparent case.
It's cool. I have always been disappointed by their cases because they're either too big or they feel too cheap. The Beats Fit Pro case feels so flimsy. Like if you push that too hard, it'll just like snap off. So yeah, it's interesting to see like Apple, the same company, basically releasing two types of the same product. I'm still on the side of the AirPods Pro 2, but let me know if you end up getting the Beats Studio Buds Plus. I want to know like what you all think of this thing, okay?
Yep. I just want to say that Y in the live stream chat is saying, list of things that Dev trusts, colon, nothing. But let's add a thing, which it sounds like you trust the AirPods Pro 2.
I trust them. I trust them enough to buy them again within the same year. And I honestly, I'm just using credit card points. So like that is, it's not real money, right? I'm not really spending money again. It's just like fake money. It's all imaginary. But yeah, I do like the AirPods Pro 2. I like tech I can trust, everybody. And I like companies that support that tech. And Apple is not perfect, but they are certainly better than a lot of others when it comes to this sort of thing.
I do trust Apple more when it comes to privacy.
This is true. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Sherlyn, I know you were excited to talk about something, which I also just saw.
Hell yes. Yeah. Been waiting to talk about the BlackBerry movie, which I saw sometime in April at a tech press screening, which was nice. And I've been since talking to Devendra about it. This is the movie that charts the rise and fall of BlackBerry, the phone / company that...
I mean, Research in Motion is
took the world
company
by storm.
Yeah.
Yes, RIM, yeah. So they started off as Research in Motion. They still are, you're right. The company was always RIM. But the product they produced was the BlackBerry phones, the BlackBerry BBM messaging system, BBOS, a lot of different things. And it just told very compellingly. The acting was great. This I forget all the actors' names.
Okay,
now.
So yeah, it is about Mike Lazaridis, the co-CEO, and the real original founder of Research in Motion, and Jim Balzali, played by Glenn Howerton. Jay Baruchel, by the way, plays Mike Lazaridis, and you may know him from. This is the End. He's really good in This is the End. There was a TV show, Undeclared, that came out after Freaks and Geeks. So like early Apatow stuff. Jay Baruchel also plays the lead in How to Train Your Dragon. If you like that series is also freaking fantastic. Glenn Howerton.
That's right, yes.
Glenn Howerton is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And people know him more as a shouty comedy guy. And he is kind of like tremendous in this movie because he plays Jim Balzali, as a guy who's just like always angry, just always has something
so
up his
good,
butt. He's so
good.
Like clenched and like so always good. Fighting. He's God. Very good, but also like, man, that is, he just enters a room
bad boss.
And it's like toxic work environment. Like he just emanates it. Yeah. But through the sheer will of his toxicity, he pumped BlackBerry up to be kind of a force in the world.
Oh, yeah.
So my main question for you, Sherlyn, because I like to make fun of you a lot. I want to know how much of this felt actually new to you, like the rise of BlackBerry, the rise of BlackBerry Messenger, which this movie all covers. And of course, we all know what happened to RIM. Like RIM went from having a big chunk of the mobile market to zero as of like 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
How much of this felt new to you? How much of this like was part of what you covered or already knew?
Yeah. Okay. A few things up front, right? Julio again in our chat says BlackBerry was bae. I never had that experience of BlackBerry was bae. Why? Because I never had a BlackBerry. In Singapore growing up, I had dumb phones, the Nokia 3310, the et cetera, et cetera. My first smartphone was like a Samsung Omnia or something, and I had a Nokia Symbian phone. So I never really had a BlackBerry experience. So a lot of the stuff that people were like really getting, I didn't vibe with. And yes, a lot of it was new to me. RIM was new to me. The founders' names were new to me. A lot of the phone models were new to me. But as a tech member of the tech press, right, a lot of this also felt like so core to what we do. The product design process that they cover, I'm just like, whoa. I also want to point out at the tech press event, there was a little bit of like a giveaway situation. Okay. This was like almost like a friends event at this point because it was all the people we knew, right? And I won what was the second prize technically. And it was this like, someone in Finland had like custom jiggered a little BlackBerry keyboard they bought off of a black market somewhere, not black market, but like a resellers market, hooked it up to a USB-C port and like Raspberry Pi circuit board or something. And it is basically a BlackBerry keyboard that will work with any USB-C device. That was the second prize. I won that prize. Cool. The first prize was an old BlackBerry phone.
Was it a Storm? Did they give somebody a BlackBerry Storm that they all...
Someone gave an old phone. I forget which one. It was someone's parents' phone. They gave it away. I
just have to say, it is just really funny. So first of all, this movie is excellent. It is a very good chart of the rise and fall and also of the innovator's dilemma and also the drama of everything happening here. Because it really is like Mike Lazaridis was known as like kind of a genius level engineer. And the stuff he did in the 90s being like, there's all this wireless spectrum out here that's not really being used. Somebody should really take advantage of it. And people love their email, especially executives and people who will pay a lot for a thing. This movie does a great job of charting the actual work that he did to shrink a device down to the size, also take advantage of the networks. And there's some great like process work here of the networks being like, we can only support, 10 of these devices at once. And then Lazaridis will do a demo and sketch out not if we break up the components and we make it really, really compact and really efficient, because data networks barely existed back then in the 90s and the early 2000s. There's a lot of genius level work here going on. The introduction of BlackBerry Messenger, where it's just like a 30-second scene where one of the co-CEOs is like, why are you working on texting? And Lazaridis is like, well, our texting, first of all, text used to cost 10 cents a pop in the US and were very expensive in much of the world.
This freaking changed BBM everything. BBM was just
like, hey, free texting, it's pretty instant, and only on BlackBerry. Free texting.
Only on BlackBerry.
And that is another thing that exploded the platform. And then in short order, you see them all gathered around watching the iPhone keynote, and you could just it's all, you guys have no clue. You have no clue about what's coming, because Lazaridis is media it doesn't have a keyboard. Nobody's going to want this.
Yeah.
It's too expensive. Yeah, yeah. It takes up too much data.
Right.
And
I don't want to give too many spoilers, even if this is a factual movie that's happened. Yeah, this is real life. It's happened, whatever. But that scene, honestly, that iPhone watching scene, pivotal. Goosebumps. Great scene. Because why? Because it ties in so much with, again, I think it's a special thing for us tech press. I didn't live through most of it, but we know the future. Also, for me, there was towards the end of the movie, a scene where Lazaridis is looking at new phones that were assembled / made in China.
That was a big deal.
That was a huge deal. And to me, knowing what happened with BB, the licensed brand, and TCL, a company from China, that irony, the dramatic, well, it's dramatic, but some kind of irony or poetic. It's poetic, right? It's kind of awful poetic, dark poetic. That really hit me in the feels. I was like, whoa, 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 wait a second. And then TCL bought them? Yeah. Whoa.
It does toe the line. We talked about xenophobia earlier. And Lazaridis is somebody who's like, well, in the very first scene of the movie, he's like, he sees an intercom and it's like buzzing. And he immediately takes it apart ahead of their meeting. And it's kind of funny. Great character introduction work here. But he sees the made in China sign. He's like, well, this is not made well. And it is kind of like a shorthand. It can be a racist shorthand. But honestly, in the 90s, it was also kind of true, where a lot of junk was coming out of China, too.
Back in the day. Yeah.
And he kind of held on to that too much. And now you got to think, where are the iPhones getting made, buddy? Where the thing that's eating your lunch getting made? And that, to me, is the more poetic justice, too, that they didn't really fit into the movie. Anyway, this movie is very good. It's in theaters
Long chat, but yes.
We'll talk about it. Good. I'm working on a review. I know it's a little late, but I want to get some words out about this. But also, it does feel amazing for Sherlyn, a lot of this is new to you. You work at a site that covered so much of this too. You can go back through the Engadget archives and see a lot of this. You could go see our review of the BlackBerry Storm.
You know what pissed me off in this movie? Never once did they mention Engadget.
The Gadget blogs barely existed for 2005.
They mentioned Wired. They have Wired on there. Screw Wired. You, Wired. Hi.
Wired is a titan for a reason. Wired's been around since the 80s. But go check out Engadget's review of the BlackBerry Storm. I had a lot of fun going back and reading our coverage of this. And also, I wrote some of this coverage too, AdventureBeat and other places, in 2012 when Lazaridis and Balzali sat, basically stepped down. I went to dinner with a bunch of these folks. I forget if they were actually at the dinners. But 2010, 2011... I was going to dinner with BlackBerry. I was going to dinner with Nokia. And in so many ways, I was just saying hey, guys, you're screwed.
Gosh.
What are you doing about this? Why are we sitting here having steak when you're screwed? And both Nokia and BlackBerry people were like, we're not too worried. We'll be fine. We're BlackBerry.
Well, they were frogs getting boiled in the hot water, right? They weren't
Nokia were Finnish people getting boiled in their saunas, basically. But yeah, that's basically what it was. It's just like this. It also brings back all those feels too, because hey, if you're old enough, if you guys have been reading Engadget for a while, you've seen this history. I think this movie just does a great job of like boiling it down, capturing the drama, and telling a really realistic version of this story. Because one thing I didn't like about the Tetris movie, which is fine and fun, but kind of dumb, is that it really watered down the real drama to, like, have a car chase and to make things, like, really silly and really, like, I don't know, really campy in a way. So, anyway, Black Mirror movie, very good.
I will say there was one thing I really hated about the Black Mirror movie. I really hated that the first few scenes were shot on, like, this The Office-style shaky cam sort of situation.
It's good.
Really pissed me off. It was fine. I think it's, but here, if you're like me and you don't like that sort of shooting, I think just listen and just give it the 15 minutes, right? The first 15 minutes is shot kind of like that, but the rest of it is pretty good. And it's not.
They do kind of change up the, I think it's very distinct. Like the color even changes at a certain point, I think. Like something happened.
It goes from very warm to
it's
very
cool. It's a
very 90s
movie. So anyway, it's all that. Very good. It's in theaters now. It'll be on video demand very soon. Check out my review. I just wanted to quickly shout out, now that we have a little time, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is fully out.
I hear so many good things.
So many good things. Yeah. Nate talked about it for his review last week, and I just want to say I put a couple hours into it. It's brilliant. It is weirdly, it's so Nintendo, because it's also like, it's not perfect. It's kind of weirdly punishing. Like within the first hour, it felt like I was basically playing Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie The Revenant, where there's a point in the first island where there's just like snow, and you got like, well, you better have your warming up food, you better have like, you better stay near the fires when you can. Like it is not hand-holdy in the way a lot of other games are, and to me that was kind of, I've talked to a lot of people who play video games a lot, who like got lost on that first island. And I just thought it was kind of like brave and amazing that Nintendo made something that could be done like this. And I think the systems themselves, the actual building systems, may also be a little too much. It's definitely overwhelming. Have you been playing it, Trillin? Because you have a Switch.
I do, but Zelda's not my game. I know, blasphemy, I know, but I don't play Zelda. I've heard good things. I might. I just need to, look, I need to finish Pokemon first, okay? And I
There's
still haven't,
no
you know what
Pokemon.
I've been doing? I've been reading books. I've been reading books.
Very good. I just want to say that. But I do agree, it's not as elegant as Breath of the Wild was. It's more like, I think Nintendo's less afraid of like breaking things down. They're like just adding loads of systems. The one power that lets you literally just like rise up through ceilings just feels like it is hilarious, because there's no logic to it, right? It's just pure like, hey, this is a video game. We give you this thing that lets you go up. Are you tired of climbing? You could go up now. And I do feel like Nintendo doesn't have to feel the need to explain exactly why that works. Yeah. And it's good. I wish I had more time to actually play. That is the curse right now, but I'm hoping to clock in more time. Let us know how you're feeling about Zelda or any of this stuff, or if you see the Blackberry movie podcast at Engadget.com.
That's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, at Devendra at Mastodon.social on the Mastodon site. And hey, I'm on Blue Sky. I'm at Devendra on Blue Sky as well. I don't have any invites. Sorry, Sherlyn.
Congrats. If you want to send me, if you're a Google employee, you have thoughts on the internal process, you send me an email. I've got some new ones. Sherlyn at Engadget.com. C-H-E-R at Engadget.com also works.
Oh, you finally got Sherlyn at Engadget.com.
Yeah, I know. Hit me up, c@engadget.com. But if you have things you can talk about publicly, like, I don't know, what should be my next video call out, you can send them my way. I'm still on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. Podcast will kill the TikTok star. No, I'm kidding.